Hello, beautiful dreamers, and welcome back to the Dream Hub podcast. I'm your host, Melissa. I'm a dream therapist, a tea brewer, and a storyteller of the night mind. And today I have the joy of welcoming back someone I deeply admire, the extraordinary Linda Yale Schiller. Linda is a psychotherapist, dream worker, trauma specialist, longtime professor at Boston University School of Social Work and a respected elder in the field of dream studies. Many of you loved our last conversation where we explored PTS dreams, nightmares, trauma healing, and the somatic and spiritual layers of dream work. And today we're gathering for something very special. Linda has just released her powerful new book, Ancestral Dreaming, and it is honestly one of the most important contributions to modern dream work that I've seen in years. This conversation is all about lineage, inherited memory, epigenetics, intergenerational wounds, and how our dream world becomes a bridge between the living and those who came before us. If you've ever felt a dream that didn't feel entirely yours, or if you've sensed patterns that run deeper than your own story, this episode is for you. Linda, welcome back. I'm so excited to get into this with you.
Oh, thank you. So nice to see you again, Melissa.
I've interviewed you so many times and I always love it. You always come out with something that just makes me think beyond what I'd usually think about.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I'm glad.
Let's get into it. I'd love to hear about the birth of this new book. We did touch on it a little bit in the previous episode, but I'd love to know what was the moment or series of moments that told you that it was time to write Ancestral Dreaming.
Great. So I don't think I'm repeating myself, and I apologize if I am because I don't remember whenever it was we spoke last exactly what I said. But I had been working. I've written two books. I've written Modern Dream Work, and I've written PTS Dreams. And a couple of years ago, I got a Facebook message from a colleague of ours in the dream community, who was a Ukrainian American volunteer in the Ukraine, working with the war trauma survivors. And he was using my book, PTS Dreams, to help them heal from their nightmares. And I was very, very honored that he was using that and that it was helpful for him and for them. And in particular, I was honored because my ancestors actually came from the Ukraine. So my grandfather was born in the Ukraine in Kyiv. And he and his parents left when he was a little boy during the pogroms. So they escaped actually from the Ukraine and came first through England and then to America. So there felt like something so synchronistically full circle about me being in a position to offer some aid and assistance to people who in the past had actually hurt my ancestors and caused them to leave the country. So I just felt that there was such a powerful message there that I needed to pay attention to this and to follow up on it. So then the rest of the story is that he discovered that my first book, Modern Dream Work, was translated into, of all things, Russian. And so he used that to help teach the Ukrainian folks English. So he was using PTS dreams to help them with their nightmares and using Modern Dream Work in translation from Russian to teach them English and have a better form of conversation with them. So that's all going on in the background, and we're talking back and forth through Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp or whatever we were using. And then I had a dream, right? So as many of us know, all good dream works, you know, if they don't start with a dream, they've got a dream somewhere in them. But this one started with a dream too. And this was a dream I had about borscht. And borscht is a Eastern European beet soup. It's a peasant soup. And it's made all over the Eastern Europe and the Ukraine. And in this dream, I'm supposed to be teaching people how to make borscht, and it's not going that well. And someone comes and says, "Oh no, it's because you don't have the right equipment. You need a shredder to shred the beets." So he brings the shredder, the chef, and we shred the beets, and then we make some good borscht. So I go back to my students and say, "Okay, we have to start over because we didn't have the right equipment. Now we've got this shredder, and we can make borscht." And that was the dream. Just pretty short and simple. And I had that during the time that I was going back and forth with this colleague, Jose, in the Ukraine. So I worked on my dream, like, what was this about? I knew it had something to do with my books being used in the Ukraine and with Jose presenting them. And I knew it had to do with something in my own past, because I was already aware that part of my family had come from the Ukraine. So we know that as good dreamers, we can't see the back of our own head without at least two mirrors. So that's the benefit of working with a colleague or a therapist or working with many people in a dream circle. So we get other perspectives. So I worked on some with my own, and then I worked with my friend Julie. And this is what we unpacked about the book. Excuse me. Well, there's a Freudian slip, right? It wasn't about the book yet. It was just about the dream. So beets, the other word for a beet is beetroot. So we knew it had to do with roots. So we've got beetroots, and beets are red. So red is the color of many things, including blood. And so in the dream, I'm making the soup of my ancestors. And I need to be able to both to teach others, and I need help from another person and from a particular machine. So when we have a dream, we have an unusual word or an unusual object, we pay attention to it. So a shredder was kind of an unusual word and thing. It's kind of like a food processor. So I asked myself, and my friend asked me, "Well, what's a shredder then?" So a shredder grinds up food into little tiny bits. So here I'm doing the associations to the image in the dream. So it grinds up food into little bits so that it becomes more edible, and we're able to chew it, eat it, and metabolize it, and have it be nutritious for us. So that's on one hand what a shredder does. And then on the other hand, a shredder is something that shreds, that rips things into little pieces. And sometimes, if we're experiencing a heartbreak of some sort or a difficulty, we might even say, "Oh, I feel shredded," or "My heart feels shredded after this last breakup with someone." So we have these two sort of opposite meanings going on at the same time. And then I started to make the connection between the feeling that so many people across the planet have of feeling shredded by the history of their parents or their grandparents or their great grandparents or their ancestors who've left places or lived in places where there was war or famine or natural disasters or trauma or poverty of some kind or another. So that's one sense of the shredder. And then we have to do the work of being able to metabolize and find a way to get some nutrition and connect with our ancestors so that we can heal from whatever they went through. And the beauty is, because dreams are sacred time, right? It's always now in a dream. It's not yesterday, and it's not tomorrow. So if we're having a dream that an ancestor is featured in, then it's now for us and for them. So both in our waking and our sleeping states, we can do various forms of healing back in time to heal our ancestors so that we can then bring that healing forward in time to ourselves and to our children and our descendants. And rather than pass on a legacy of hardship and wounding, we can pass on a legacy of resilience and healing. So that sort of, in a nutshell, is how the book came to be and some of the themes that come out of it.
Thank you for sharing. That was so interesting to hear. I love like the play on words and the beetroot. Beet even has multiple meanings in it, like to beat something up or the beat of a drum. And so I found it Very interesting that there was just so much to that one little symbol that you might have just thought, well, beets go in that soup. So, and it could have been easy to just brush over and not notice it, but you've really gotten down into every single aspect of the dream and pulled it apart. Get a lot of
Thank you
meaning.
for noticing that. It's spoken like a true dream worker, Melissa. And when I've been giving a few talks here in the greater Boston area, and someone from one of the participants in one of the talks, we have some questions and answers afterwards, and one person said to me, "Do you think that the chef that in the dream, the teacher, might have been an ancestor of yours?" And it's like, "Oh, I never thought of that." And that was just so brilliant. So here was an example of, getting that other additional layer of insight from somebody else besides yourself.
Yeah, the more mirrors, the better, hey? So how do you define an ancestral dream? Like for someone who's listening and is new to this concept, how would they sense the difference between like a personal dream or a collective dream or one that's carrying ancestral threads?
Good question. So that we can use the word ancestor and the meaning at several different levels or layers. So the first layer is we have a dream where one of our relatives that we know shows up in the dream. And if that relative has already departed, has already passed over, then sort of by definition, it's an ancestral dream. Now we can get visitors in our dream who may or may not be our actual relative. We can get images or symbols in a dream. So if we dream of someone, we can say, "Oh, that person in the dream kind of looks like my mom, so I think she's my mom." Or, "I know this person in the dream is supposed to be my dad, even though he doesn't look like him, but I know that it's supposed to be him." So there's one layer of connecting with our departed through dream symbols and dream metaphors. And then there's another layer of what we call visitation. So in visitation dreams, we have, as Eugene Gendlin, who developed focusing, would say, we have a felt sense of their presence with us in the room. So this is not, "Oh, there was this image in a dream," but no, my grandma was right there in the room with me. I feel it. There's a frisson, there's an awareness, there's a tingle. And people have said to me things like, "I can, feel my, grandmother's hand on the back of my head stroking my hair." Or I felt my one woman said, "I felt my husband kiss my cheek." He had already passed. One of my clients told me that her beloved cat, Snowflake, she felt him on her chest purring, and she knew that was a visit from her family member, Snowflake.
Those are so magical. I love those dreams. They're just so comforting. Last night I had my pets in my dream that had passed away, and I was showing pictures of, that I had taken of them, and then I went, "Oh, this is a dream," and it helped me to become lucid. So I've started having that happen whenever someone who's passed away shows up in my dream. It's been a trigger for me for lucidity.
What a wonderful trigger for lucidity. So
Yeah.
you're sort of going backwards and forwards at the same time with those dreams. That's wonderful.
So, could you walk us through a few or one or two of the practices or guided processes that are in this book, Ancestral Dreaming, that listeners could safely try at home? Because I know that you speak about things like dream dialogue and guided imagery and somatic integration and those sorts of things. I was wondering if you could sort of explain how these things go together as a focused approach, or just like a little activity that people could do to try to help them with this topic.
Sure. I'm going to approach this sort of in a roundabout way to answer the question.
It was a roundabout question, so
No, it was
that
great, but I can't answer it straight on without background because,
Yeah.
I'm a dreamer and a therapist, as my daughter would tell you. Mom, you're talking therapy talk again, but we're very careful about that. So if someone would like to connect with a departed relative in a dream, and they haven't yet, one of the first things I say to them is, "Have you invited them?" So some of our relatives just show up, and depends on their personality and your belief systems and what the circumstances were of their passing and what's happening on the other side. Many things that we don't necessarily, some we know and some we don't know. But some of them are very sort of prim and proper and would no more dream of showing up to visit you than they would showing up at your house unannounced. That's just not their style. So I say, first of all, practice dream incubation, where you spend a little time before you go to sleep at night posing a question or a dilemma or a problem or something you want to dream about and get information and invite them. So that's one simple, easy exercise that someone can do is, write a little bit in their dream journal about their grandmother or about their aunt Sue and say, I'd really love to have you come visit me in my dream tonight. And chances are much higher that if you continue the invitation, you will get a visit from them. If you don't, then there's another in say, I don't know, a couple of days, and you don't get any response that you can understand. You've got two choices then. One choice is to incubate. Can you please send me a dream to whoever your dream muse is as to why I'm not getting a visit or why I'm not getting a response? Is there something interfering? Is there something in their way? Is there something I have to do first? Or, so that's one approach. Have I been getting visits but haven't recognized them because it's come couched in a symbol or a metaphor or something I just didn't recognize? So in that case, you can say, please be crystal clear and send me a dream that leaves me no doubt as to that my mom or my grandma visited me last night. So those are a couple of variations on some exercises, just to get the ball rolling, to get started, with getting a visit going.
That's great. I love how you say, if it's not in their personality type to just show up unannounced, then they're not going to, and you have to invite them. Because I think we forget, I mean, once you pass, you're still you, and people still have the same personality traits as they did when they were here. So, some people do just burst through the door unannounced, and those are the types of people that probably just bust into your dreams. But it is nice to give an invitation. And I noticed that around special occasions, I get a few more ancestral dreams. Like around before I got married, my nana showed up in a dream and she'd never shown up before. And she had suitcases and she was like, I'm here for the wedding. So that was so beautiful.
Oh, that's great.
I've also had it happen when I was really unwell and I was sick and I just needed some comforting. And my grandfather showed up in a dream and came and gave me a big hug. And then I woke up and I felt much better. So I love the ideas of incubating the dreams, inviting them, asking why not. But I think personally for me, and maybe for some other people, is paying extra attention around special events or when something big's going on in your life, because I feel like they show up a little bit more then.
Yeah. I think I would agree with you. Showing up in our life when there's a big event or we need them in our life, but also they may tend to show up when there's been a big event in their life. Anniversary of their death, for example, or their birthday, or a holiday. Like over here in the States, we just celebrated Thanksgiving and people gather with families around the table for Thanksgiving. And so it's in the air more when it's an anniversary date or a holiday that's a family-oriented holiday that perhaps they used to join you at.
Yeah. And I also like how you were saying that it might be a dream where you didn't recognize it was a visit. So sometimes they may be sending like a sign or a symbol or some guidance instead, and you don't realize that that's coming from them.
Right. And so that gives me a great opportunity to say that sometimes the visits or the connection comes in a sleeping dream. And sometimes it comes through in what I call dream adjacent waking states. So play types of experiences where we're wide awake, but we might be in more relaxed. We might be in that hypnagogic in-between zone. We might be walking in nature and tuning into the synchronicity. We might be in trance or meditation. In these states as well, we are more apt to get visitors in these liminal in-between worlds where our waking barriers of between our conscious self and our unconscious self are lowered. Can I give you an example?
Yeah.
This. So when my dad died several years ago, the first week after he died, a red cardinal came and tapped at my mom's window every single day for a week. It had never happened before, and it never happened after that. But for the first week following his death, she had this tapping. And she knew, I mean, she just knew in her soul, this was Bud coming to say, I'm okay. I've made it over. I'm fine. I'm coming to say hello. I'm not really gone. And we all have sort of adopted that. And we really feel that whenever we see cardinals now my mom has passed at this point as well. So when either we see the dad or we almost never see the mom by itself, but when we see the couple, we always feel like, oh, our parents are here visiting with us.
Oh,
It's really nice.
That's so beautiful. And that's like really great example and advice for some people who struggle with their dream recall, because they can feel really jealous that, you know, some people are remembering more dreams and therefore they have a higher chance of having these interactions. But I guess it's comforting for them to know that you don't have to be asleep to have these interactions. Yeah. All right.
One of my clients who was in my dream group, because I run a dream circle, she her dad had passed and she kept incubating to have him visit her in a dream. And she'd say, Dad, I need a sign. I want to know you're okay. Give me a sign. And nothing, nothing, nothing. And she was getting very discouraged. And finally, one week she came in with a big smile on her face and she said, I've got it. And she said she was driving down the street and she looked up and she saw a street sign and the sign said George Street. And her father's name was George.
Oh.
And she said, I totally know that was my dad. And I recognized his sense of humor because I'd been asking for a sign. So he literally.
Yes, that's a literal sign.
Yeah.
The street
yeah.
sign. That's great. Yeah. And I guess there you are. She was asking for it. So that just also
Right.
shows.
And it didn't come in her sleep.
Asking.
It
Yeah.
came because she was paying attention to the synchronicity in a waking moment.
That's great. All right, I
Yeah.
want to pivot back to your book and talk
Okay.
about the topic of like adoption, unknown lineages, and complex families, because your book beautifully includes people with unknown, fractured, or blended lineages. So, how can listeners engage with ancestral dreaming when the family tree is complicated or not fully known?
That's a great question. And that's one of the things that I do give a shout out to one of my initial editors at Llewellyn, because our daughter was born in China and we brought her home when she was a year old. So the topic of families and adoption is very close to my heart. And the editor said, you wrote a little bit about this so far. This is really important. Write more. So I added more stories and more information about that. And the first thing, so there's two different things. One, there's families with adoption or unknown lineage, and then there's complicated family dynamics. We'll break it into two pieces. So if you have adoption in your family, whether you yourself were adopted or your parents were, or your children were, or your grandchildren are, first of all, there's no difference in family love and connection, whether you birthed the child or you adopted the child. They're your child. Period. So that's for starters. And this piece, I don't even think I put in this book. I might have put in a different book, but I remember when we first got the referral from China that we had a child waiting for us to come over. I started sending her energetically, like the red thread of connection, like months before we ever met, so that when we finally met, when we went to China, we already had this connection. Of that red thread going on. So with kids or family members who are adopted, it's important to recognize that there are several lineages, right? There's the lineage of the family they're adopted into. If your family is Australian, or if your family is from China, or if your family is American, whatever your family is, that's their family too. So your history and your background and your values and your customs and how you celebrate holidays and what spiritual or religious practices you have, you're going to bring your kid up with some or many of those. So that's who they are. However, in addition to that, there's going to be yet another line of their birth family. So my daughter is very aware that in addition to me and her dad, she has birth parents somewhere on the other side of the world who she descended from. So in growing up, we took great care to honor that part of her and her connection. And we, excuse me, you know, we connected when she was little with another group of adoptees of we called them China girls, the families with children adopted from China, and we met weekly for years and years and years. And I was actually delighted that one of the members of the group came to my and came to my book reading last week. And our two girls grew up together, and so they learned Chinese calligraphy a little bit. They learned Chinese customs. We celebrated Chinese New Year. And then at a certain point, they're free to choose how much of their ancestral history from the birth family they want to pursue or not. But we wanted to give them the opportunity to make those connections and have that as part of their history. And I just think that's really, really important to honor who they are and where they come from. And our daughter really, of course, you know, identifies as, yep, I'm Asian. But I grew up in an American Jewish family, and that's who I am, and these are the values I have, and you know, this is how I grew up. And so that's her identity even more at this point in time in her life.
That's great because then she's not going to feel like there's a part of her missing. Instead, it's sort of like she's abundant.
Right. That's the hope, right?
Yeah.
To be able to have, and I love that you pointed that out. So to be able to have the both and, not the either or, and you don't have to
Yeah.
choose one or the other. You can be this and that. It doesn't have to be this or that. That sense of abundance that you spoke about.
Yeah, that's really nice. So let's share a dream. Do you have a dream of your own that you would like to share that may have profoundly shifted something for you, or a visitation dream, or another kind of like ancestral guidance, or anything like that that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Let me share an ongoing dream adjacent experience that I have for starters. My cardinal is my dad, and he's my stepfather. So I had a father of my childhood and a father of my adult life. And Bud, we call him Bud. His picture is on my dresser. I have a little altar in my bedroom. And this is something I recommend to people if they're interested, is to make a space to honor your ancestors, make a space to connect with your ancestors, with whatever helps you feel connected and closer to them, a place of beauty, a place where you're bringing in pictures or letters or sayings. My little altar has some pictures on it. It has a little cat statue because cats are part of our family too. Has seashells and crystals, just all sorts of things to make it an inviting spot to honor our ancestors. And I look at it every day because it's right on my dresser as I'm picking out what clothes to wear for the day. So there's a wonderful picture of Bud on the dresser where he's got this great famous smile on his face. So that's sort of the background here. Of all of my relatives, he's the one who shows up most for me, both in my sleeping dreams and my waking life. And literally, all I have to do is sort of mention him, and I kind of feel him right here, his presence with us. And I'm thinking, there's probably a number of reasons for that. And he's not a biological relative. My mom and Bud married, you know, when I was in my 20s, I guess. Yeah. But he's could not be more my relative as if there were blood. And this is another example of how what makes a family, it's not just blood. It's absolutely not just blood. He is a professor when I was finishing my graduate work and doing my early writing, I wrote. I was a professor of social work and group work at Boston University. And in my first writing, before I started writing about dream work, I was writing about group work. And he, Bud, was my first reader for all of my articles. I'd always send them to him because he was a professor in Fredonia near Buffalo, where I grew up. And he would give me, edits and things. And he was really my mentor for years and years to become a professional and to become, he wasn't a therapist, he taught business, but to become a professor like him. So I think because he mentored me, we developed a special closeness. And also because his picture sits facing my bed, that he's my most frequent flyer. In terms of who shows up in the dreams and who shows up to say, "Hi, I'm here," or "Here's what I think about that." So it's sort of a combination answer.
That's great. I love the idea of creating the like an altar, especially in the bedroom, I suppose, because it's there when you go to sleep, it's there when you wake up, and then it's really, well, they are really forefront of mind. And then for people listening who are wanting to have some visitation dreams or ancestral guidance coming through, that's a really great way to like solidify an invitation of like, I want you, I've created space for you, I honor you, and have them come through really strongly.
Okay, you had another part to the question. One was about adoption, and the other is if there, I don't remember the word you used, but complicated or fractured families where there are cutoffs or silences or blocks. So that is a different sort of scenario. And in the book, I've delineated six types of calls that we might get from our ancestors. And I talk about how the calls might come through in either whispers or shouts. They might be very quiet, they might be gentle, they might be really yelling and trying to get our attention, particularly if they've been trying for a long time and we haven't been able to notice that they've been trying. And depending on what they're coming through with, will depend on both how we respond and when we're ready. Whether or not we're ready or want to have that altar space in our bedroom or not, because there might be certain ancestral ghosts, like in a lot of Eastern Asian and Chinese systems, they talk about hungry ghosts. If we have hungry ghosts in our ancestry, we might not want to have an altar with their picture on it in our bedroom, at least not right away until some peace has been made. So the different calls we might get. One, the first one would simply be, "I'm still here. I've never really left. I've just changed form." And I think that's what it was with my mom and the cardinal and Bud, just changed form. Two would be, "From over here, I have some gifts for you, some blessings for you, or I'm here to make amends for something we didn't get a chance to finish in waking life." Three could be, "I have some help and some advice for you. Either you're asking for it or I'm sensing that you might need it. And here are some ideas that I have for you from where I am in on the cross the veil, connecting with the one, whatever your spiritual belief system is, that I can help you from over here." Four then is when our ancestors died in pain and with wounding. And didn't have a chance to heal from whatever trauma or pain or wounds they had in their own life. And then they're calling to us from the other side saying, "I'm stuck. I'm still in pain. I need your help." And then part of our work is to do, and there are several exercises in the book to help do this, for us to go back and offer them healing and blessings and images and help them finish their journey back to the other side. So that would be the fourth number. The fifth would be those ancestors who were carrying grudges, who held a grudge for some reason or another in the family, and they want you to carry on the grudge. "We don't talk to so and so. We don't talk to that side of the family. That side of the family are, no goodniks." You may or may not know why, but particularly if you don't, Or even if you do, if it's not your story and it's not your grudge, you don't want to be perpetuating this, right? So all of our in you know like in Romeo and Juliet, the Montagues and the Capulets, people had to die before that grudge match was over, and we don't want it to get that far. So there's a whole different set of interventions that we want to do with these ghosts if these ancestors are coming through, and that's a lot of more limit setting and saying no and sending them back to do their work, not perpetuating the enmity, if that's what's coming through. And then the final sixth stage that I wrote about in the book is simply remember me, tell my stories, tell your children and grandchildren, pass on my lineage, plant the flowers I planted in my garden, use the dishes that I had for the next holiday, pass on my legacy. So depending on which kind of dream or visit you're getting, depends on how you might want to respond.
Thank you for going into so much detail. And I think with listening to that and hearing about like the grudges and the burdens and things coming through in dreams, I suppose when you think of an ancestral dream and guidance coming through, you often think, oh, it's going to be something positive or something helpful. But this is highlighting that not all guidance is something that you should follow, even if it is ancestral. And so I feel like that's a good point to make for people to really get Linda's book and read into the details of what you should do rather than just following blindly because you've had a visitation dream and doing whatever they're telling you to. Reading that part in a little bit more depth and getting some idea on how to set the boundaries when that energy comes through a little bit too strongly. Yeah. So, Linda, you run a dream circle, as you said. Is yours online or in person?
The one that I'm running is in person. I
Yeah.
have done dream work online, but I'm not at the moment running one online.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. So if you're in Boston and you want to go to a dream circle, contact Linda. If you want to do one online, contact me. I do it once a month and they're for free. So if you are listening and you want to come along, follow the links in the show notes so that you can check what time it is where you are. And I have people from all over the world coming to those.
That's
Usually
wonderful.
the first Tuesday slash Wednesday of the month, depending on where you are. So
Well, that's terrific. That's
check
really
that
good to
out.
know. And if you're not in a place where a reasonable hour of the day for you is Australia time, I'm open to doing periodic dream circles online, probably short term, because at this point in my life and career, I'm not making another long-term commitment, but certainly for the short term, I'm happy to put together. If you have a bunch of people and you'd like to learn how to do dream work, I'm happy to jumpstart a dream group with you.
Great. Well, the email floodgates are open. People write to either of us and we'll figure something out for you because
Different
dream.
types of offering.
Yeah. So, Linda, you also have something really big coming up soon in my neighboring country, New Zealand. Would you like to tell us a bit about that?
Oh, sure. This is great. I'm going to be in New Zealand teaching dream work the weekend of March 6th through 8th, this coming March in 3 or 4 months. And the seed idea for that came, oh gosh, about a year or two before COVID. So that's what, 6 or 7 years ago now, give or take. And I was in Rolduc in the Netherlands at our International Dream Conference. And Jenny, who came to one of my workshops on PTS Dreams, said, oh, we'd love you to come to New Zealand. And I said, I've always wanted to come to New Zealand. I'd love to do it. And we started to talk about it. And then we had the COVID pandemic and it got tabled. And then a year and a half ago, we met again. Also in Amsterdam in Rolduc, and reconnected. And she basically said the offer's still open. COVID is now lifted, and I said, let's go. So we've been planning that for the last year, and registration is open now. It's going to be a full weekend of dreaming at multiple layers of dreams, looking at spirituality, looking at embodied dream work, and also looking at ancestral work and how to work with nightmares.
That'll be so cool. And New Zealand is stunning. So, yeah.
Can't
I'll send out an email and I'll put all the links in the show notes for people that are listening. So, Linda, with you writing and bringing out this book, what do you hope readers take away from it? Like, what's the main goal, or what sort of messages, what's the big picture that you want people to get when they read
wait.
this book?
I think the message of the big picture is that we are not predetermined by our history. If we can carry ancestral wounds, if we can carry intergenerational trauma, we can also carry ancestral gifts, and we can also have ancestral resilience, and we can transform ourselves and pass on that transformation rather than the pain to not just our children, but anyone whose lives we touched, whether it's through your podcast work and of course your own children, but as a teacher, as a therapist, as a mentor, as a guide in any way, shape, or form, you can pass on the healing and the resilience. And this is something we know about from the study of epigenetics, and I have a whole chapter on that. And what that means, sort of briefly, is epi, I learned as I researched for the book, is Latin for on top of or above. So it's on top of or above our genetics. And we inherit not only literally through our genetic coding, your blue eyes or my blonde hair, but we inherit what our ancestors went through. So when our ancestors in their past had trauma and their whole physiology changed as a result of PTSD, of the fight, flight, freeze response, and their biochemistry changed. And then, so that changes the way the genes are encoded. And even though it's not literally genetic, it's passed on above the genes in this epigenetic form from one generation to the next, along with how we're parented. However our parents were parented by their parents, our grandparents, it's going to be how they parent us. And that if we aren't conscious and don't have awareness, it's going to be how we parent our children, both for better and for worse. So one of the key takeaways is that awareness of our own histories gives us choice. And then when we are aware, we can choose. These are things that I really love about my family, and I want to pass on to my kids or to my students or to my mentees. And these are things that have been problematic, and I'm going to choose for the buck to stop here and not continue to pass these on. So those are some of the takeaways that. And Diana Fosher, who is a psychologist from the school, the ADEPT School of Work, says that we are all hardwired for healing. So I want us to all remember that we are hardwired for healing.
That's so powerful, and I love it so much. I feel some people can use generational trauma almost as an excuse, but sometimes it's just so hard to see past the hurt. Or they think, oh, well, my mum was an alcoholic and my grandma was an alcoholic, so it's not my fault and I can't help it and I'm just meant to be this way. But I love how you talk about that there's choice and that you can choose that it stops with you. And also choosing the positive things about them. Maybe they were an alcoholic, but maybe they were also like extremely caring and very resourceful and like very resilient, like you said. And sometimes with negativity, we can't see past that. So I really love that you brought that up.
In addition, that when there are silences in families, when things aren't talked about, they don't go away. And for many years, the prevailing thought was, that's the past, don't talk about it. And someone told me that their grandfather just said, who was a war veteran and was asked about his experience in the war, he just said, dead is dead. We don't want to talk about it anymore. It's like, okay. But that was the prevailing thought before we knew that actually dead is not just dead, and things that happen can still affect us. And so breaking silence and talking about things, when you build a family tree, when you build a genogram and you take a look at who's in your family background, ask the questions so that their voices can still be heard and that we have a chance to give voice to people who might have been silenced for reasons that we may or may not know. So that's sort of connected with when there's a tricky family history.
And yeah, we would think that, oh, if we just don't talk about it, we'll get over it, but we're not really. We're just suppressing it, and then it's going to come out in nightmares or, bad behavior and things like that, because it's just being bottled up.
Absolutely.
I do remember the other thing I was going to say now. How you said that we're hardwired for healing, and I like that because, our bodies naturally heal themselves. We get a cut, it's going to start to heal. We get an illness, we create antibodies, and we're all good. And I guess I love that about dreams, because dreams are how we heal our mental health and how we heal many, many different things, even physical ailments. We get the idea on what's wrong and how to heal through our dreams.
Right.
So yeah, I really love that you highlighted that as well. And it's just a great reminder, especially if you're somebody who is having nightmares or night terrors, or you're having trouble sleeping. It's understanding that while we're sleeping and we're dreaming, we are healing, and that we're not stuck in pain. And like you said earlier, we do have a choice. So being able to focus on the good things and the positive things on top of, or as well as the negative, and see how we can change it.
Right. And one of our choices is if someone is suffering or struggling with nightmares or bad dreams, to purposefully incubate, again, before going to sleep, it can be specific, it can be general, it can be simply, please send me guidance and wisdom to heal from these nightmares. Or could be more specific if you know what the trauma or the upset is that you're dealing with. Please send me information about how to heal from this devastating loss that I've had. And the more specific you are, the more specific the dream can come through. And then one of the keys, and I know you know this, Melissa, is that when we have a dream and we unpack the layers of meaning and the potential meaning of the different symbols and the setting and the characters and the themes, to end with, what's the action step that we need to take in order to manifest this dream in our waking life and in our waking environments so that it isn't quote unquote just a dream, but we actually put it into practice? And this can, it doesn't have to be a great big thing, it can be a small symbolic act. And it makes a difference to do an action in honor of the dream or in honor of the information you got from the dream or the wisdom of the dream to help you move out of that place of pain or stuckness into a transformational state.
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I did a dream incubation one night, and I asked, please show me a natural antidepressant. Because I'd already tried, give me a healing dream, and I did receive healing dreams, but they were more like raising the trauma to the surface to work through it and let go of it. And I was tired. So I said, give me a natural antidepressant. And my dream said to me, this was more literal than anything, and it was, look for the beauty within the mess. And so that morning I woke up and I walked downstairs, and usually I'd walk downstairs and there's mess everywhere. I've got two little kids and there's half bowls of cereal here and a nappy next to the bin, not in the bin, and all these sorts of things. I'm like, ah! But I walked downstairs and I remembered it, and I went, look for the beauty within the mess. And then I noticed, oh, there was a little like trickle of a rainbow coming in on the wall, like bouncing off a dirty glass. And then I could see the sun like shimmering on the pool through the window. And I noticed that on the plant, there was a new leaf had sprouted from the vine.
Oh.
And I just looked through all the details of the mess and just found all this beauty in my daughter making a mess, but she's laughing and smiling. And I was just like, oh, I'm happy. Like the mess didn't matter anymore.
Right. Oh, that's wonderful.
Nice.
You know what reminds me of the advice that Wayne Dyer gives us? He's a transformational speaker and he's written some books, and he said, When we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. And that's exactly what you did. So good on you.
Yeah, it was great. So, for the listeners, here's my challenge for you tonight. Ask your dreams for a natural antidepressant, or ask it, how can I feel happier? Something really simple so that you wake up with a different perspective or a fun idea on something to do and take action on it. So yeah, my action was I took a photo or a video and you could see the mess, and then I zoomed in on the little beautiful aspects within and shared that. So
Oh, brilliant. That's great. That's a great action step.
yeah.
Very literally, like zooming in on the beauty. We train ourselves, right, to zoom in on the beauty.
So, Linda, is there anything else that's coming to your heart or your mind that you wanted to bring up before we wrap up the episode? Is there anything that you feel like you still wanted to share about, or any topics that I've missed, or a little, I don't know, your favorite quote or anything that comes to mind that you wanted to share?
Oh, thank you. Now you've done a great job. We went, far ranging, and there are, more areas, of course, in the book than we can cover in 1 hour. I guess the one thing I will say is that the last chapter, the title of it is How to Become a Good Future Ancestor. So
That's
I,
powerful.
yeah. So how do we not only heal our ancestors and heal ourselves, but how do we then pass that on by being a good future ancestor? There's a whole sort of laundry list of things we can do that are dream related and dream connected. I guess that would be something I've, and as some of your listeners and I get older and we become, the old ones of the family, that's something. I mean, you're not there yet, but at some point you will be.
I will be.
So
It's
that's
coming
the list.
quicker than I thought
It's good for us to keep in mind, what do we want to pass down? And I guess the last thing before I forget, because this is really important, before you were asking me to define ancestry, sometimes our ancestry is also literally connected to the land. That Mother Earth, that Gaia, she is our ancestor. And many, if not most, indigenous people really have a relationship with Earth as the ancestor. So I want to encourage all of us to remember that and connect with that and feel that can strengthen us and be healing for us to remember our connection with that layer of ancestry as well.
That's beautiful. Linda, thank you truly. Your work is such a gift, not only to the dream community, but to anyone who's longing to understand the deeper threads of their own story. Ancestral dreaming invites us to walk with wisdom, to honor what has been carried, and to choose what continues through us, which I love that part, is you're getting to choose what you're going to pass down, and to choose what you carry and what you share. So, for everybody listening, if this conversation stirred something in you, a memory, a pull, a curiosity, follow it. Your dreams might be holding stories that belong to you, your ancestors, or the future that you're shaping. So, you can explore more of Linda's works and teachings and resources. She has a lot of websites: lindayaoshiller.com, ptsdreams.com, moderndreamwork.com, and ancestral-dreaming.com. And I will put all of the links in the show notes so that you can just go down and click on that. And then you can find me at dreamhub.au and nightnectar.au. And across socials, it's dream_hub. So again, that will be in the show notes. And like I said earlier, our inboxes are open. Please reach out. We love to hear from you. If you've read Linda's books and they've touched you in any way, please let her know, because it's just so helpful for people to so that they keep going and keep sharing. Thank you for sharing this space with us today, Linda. Thank you for showing up. It's been amazing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure reconnecting with you. And I hope I see you, if not in New Zealand, that I see you in Oregon in the fall. Excuse me, in the spring.
I'm hoping to get there. I love IASD. I love the conferences, and I love getting to travel. And it was amazing to get to meet you in person after interviewing you online so many times.
Oh, thank you. That was great.
Okay,
And I
listen.
have to say, your readers, I mean, your listeners might know this, but Melissa travels with these two amazing gentlemen who carry all her heavy things and lug them around. And at the drop of a hat, she can stop and film an interview sort of anywhere she has because she's these two giant, guys with her supporting her work. It was so much fun to see you in action.
Yeah, my film crew. I like that. I'd give them different roles. You're my security guards today, my bag guys, my film crew. And also go help Linda hang up that poster.
They were
Great.
great.
They had a wonderful time.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Well, listeners, until next time, may your nights be insightful, your dreams be guiding, and your lineage be held with compassion. Sweet dreams, everyone.
Sweet dreams.